Yeah, we're up to Perek Revi'i in your Siddurim. It should be Mishnah Yud Aleph, 11 in the Siddurim. Yud Aleph.
Thank you.
And the Mishnayos would be Tess and Rabbi Yonatan, exactly. And the Siddurim, it should be Mishnah Yud Aleph, 11. So we have a Rabbi Yonatan. He would seem to likely be the Talmud of Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol. So that would set him in the generation after Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol and Rabbi Akiva. He would have lived after the Korban. And Rabbi Yonatan is not such a rare name, but when it's not Rabbi Yonatan ben somebody or another, it would seem to be usually he. So this Rabbi Yonatan tells us in Yud Aleph, Rabbi Yonatan Omer, Yud Aleph. Four. 4:11. Revi'i Yud Aleph. So he says, Rabbi Yonatan Omer, Kol HaMekayim Es HaTorah Me'oni, anyone who upholds the Torah in poverty, Sofo L'Kayimo Me'osher. In the end, he will be able to uphold it from better situations, from wealth. V'Kol HaMevatel Es HaTorah Me'osher, the converse, the inverse, is anyone who neglects the Torah as a result of his wealth, his well-to-do-ness, Sofo levatalo me'oni. So in the end, he'll come to neglect it out of not doing so well, out of poverty. So, I mean, the explanation is pretty much self-evident. We know the Mishnah is telling us something very important to realize. We're going to see soon also one of the other Tanoim speaks how there's always reasons to neglect one's studies. I have to do this, I have to do that. So if somebody is misgaber over that and he does make time for Torah even when he has difficult situations, so Hashem will reward him. Inversely, somebody who has the best as he could hope for and he, you know, finds more distractions and he just can't be bothered, so his situation may very well be lessened, may well be made not so great. And also implicit in this idea, we know the idea in general, we say schar mitzvah b'hai al malekah. The real reward of any mitzvah is not in this world at all. Yet the Torah promises us many things, good rains and good crops and Baruch Hashem, all sorts of good things. So what is that? So that is always compared to like the expense account. For a good worker, he brings home a salary check at the end of the pay period. But in the meantime, a good salesperson or whatever it is, somebody who gets an expense account, he's given that obviously at the beginning so he can use it and do good business with it. And somebody who handles it well, so his credit limit is extended. He does better. He has more leeway with the funds of the company. Somebody who doesn't seem to be doing very well, they'll lower it. They'll say, well, you know, we'll still give you $5 if you really need it, but we're not going to just extend you open credit. You don't seem to be doing very much with it. So that's certainly always the idea in all the tovos that Hashem gives us. We should regard them not as a reward. That's sure, we have no idea what the real reward is. That's later. But it's very much judged upon what we do with it. So that would be the idea of this Mishnah also. Continuing, we have in Yud Beis, in the Siddur, Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir we discussed a while ago, because we were talking about his father-in-law, Rabbi Chananya Chanina ben Taradion. We said that Rabbi Chananya Chanina ben Taradion's daughter, Beruria, married Rabbi Meir. So we discussed back then, we said how Rabbi Meir famously was offered to many nisim. From him we have the tefillah, Elokei d'Meir aneini, God of Meir, answer me. And he is, of course, the Rabbi Meir Baal HaNes. Of all the Pushkas, that is the Rabbi Meir we're talking about over here. His Yahrzeit is supposedly on Pesach Sheni, Yudalad Iyar, and his Kever is by the Kinneres in Tveria. And Rabbi Meir was one of the major Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, and also of Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol. So he would have been a colleague of Rabbi Yonatan from the Mishnah before. Rabbi Meir was also an excellent sofer. That's brought down in, I think, Eruvin. He mentions how he was a sofer and was told different laws by Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva. He was an expert sofer. So, and when Rabbi Meir was nifter, they said, Batlu Moshle Mishalim, people who could teach by means of excellent Mishalim. There's nobody like that after Rabbi Meir. It's mentioned that Rabbi Meir had a collection of 300 Mishalim just about foxes to illustrate points. 300 is a round number. I don't know if it has to mean 300, but a very large collection of, obviously, very to the point, excellent Mishalim. I guess we might say something like the Dubna Magid or something, who knew exactly what sort of a story to use to bring out a point. I mean, he was one of the Gedolei HaTanoim. They say any time that the halacha is not like Rabbi Meir is just because he was like too brilliant for the rest of the company, and halacha is not necessarily like him, but he was an extraordinarily brilliant Tana. So he was really his teacher, in a sense. I will say that I think when we get up to Elisha ben Avuya, but Rabbi Meir and his brilliance was able to extract the Torah of Acher and not get mangled and ruined by Acher. So that's, you're right, that's another parsha of Rabbi Meir's greatness. So Rabbi Meir says, Rabbi Meir Omer, Havei memai be'esek, he says, be a lesson your business dealings, the Asek, but asok for Torah. Rather, make all your Asek, your dealings in the Torah. Ve'veish faruach b'snechal adam, and be lowly of spirit before all people. We'll see where that fits in exactly. And then he continues about the Torah. Ve'imbatalta min haTorah, if you do indeed neglect the Torah, yesh l'cha b'telem harbe kinegdecha, you'll have many things making you neglect it standing in front of you. Ve'imam malta b'Torah, however, if you toiled in Torah, yesh lo sachar harbe litain loch. And not everybody's goresh lo, but it means Hashem, there is much reward to give to you, or there is to him, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, very much reward to give to you. So, we've had this concept before, that certainly one's ikur must be in the Torah. With the Dibar Tabom, we read in Shema twice a day, you should speak in them, in Divrei Torah. It's true, you also have to speak about other things, including your business, including mundane stuff, which is fine. But Ikur Diburcha should be in the Torah. And why this Haveshval Ruach fits in right there, it seems a little bit out of place. But, you know, lessen your business dealings, then we speak about Bittul Torah and keeping Torah. Why is this Shval Ruach there? So Rabbeinu Yonah says it's there to say that even once you have achieved this mala of not being so involved in the world and being very involved in the Torah, so you still have no reason to be a gaivadik about it. It's all bracha. It's all siyata d'shmaya from Hashem. So a kal v'chomer to somebody who might want to be a gaivadik about things that have nothing to do with us, like we spoke last time about chachma, gevura, and osher. We said they go down in descending order of why anybody could possibly find what to be proud of. The chachma, maybe it comes a little bit from the person. Gevura, at least physically. Osher, it's all berkas Hashem, nothing to do with you. So that would be the idea. Even if you're on such a level, never indulge in gava, rather be on the opposite. And like we spoke about, shitlos is really the very opposite end of gava. And then the end part of this Mishnah, if you have neglected the Torah, yesh l'cha b'telem harbe kinegdecha. So we know, first of all, on a simple natural level, we all can understand this. Or they say, you know, things fill up the time that you give them. If you have a lot of time, so you end up finding a lot of things that suddenly need to be done. A lot of compelling reasons if you're given once, so it becomes more and more, oh, I really should do this, I really should do that. And they say also it's a cumulative effect of even when somebody then does want to finally buckle down and do something, one is so used to being distracted. I mean, today one would say also with one's electronics, oh, I first have to check my phone, this, that. One knows without half consciously or not, by the time one can finally settle down, there's been so much. I see it with the children in school. I have to first do this, then I have to check this after 5 minutes. It's very not conducive to settling down and seriously learning or seriously doing anything, in fact. So that would be the parsha pshat of, we all understand this, the yesh l'cha b'telem harbe kinegdecha. And more and more comes. If one gives in once, there'll be more and more. And like we said, even if one wants to then indeed forget all about it, it's very hard to do so. And the Mefarshim also note that b'telem harbe, things that will make you neglect the Torah, can chas v'sholom also refer to onshim. If one suffers reverses or anything else, one obviously is not going to be as involved in the Torah. And in such a context, they point out, there it doesn't say, yesh lo, Hashem has, because Hashem doesn't dish out onshim. Onshim are part of the natural part of this world, at least the world we live in now. And when Hashem, unfortunately, has to withdraw his special hashgacha over us every single minute, so onshim and meila, they often come. So yesh lo, it doesn't say yesh lo, it says, yesh l'cha b'telem harbe kinegdecha. You will end up with all sorts of b'telem. Alolenu, for speaking about onshim. Whereas the tzar, that comes from Hashem himself. Yesh lo sachar harbe litein lach. Hashem takes pleasure in giving me to tova merubah, and Hashem takes pleasure in it, like the opposite in Eichel, we say, Kilo inam libo, Hashem takes no pleasure, chas v'sholom, in punishing. He has to, like a parent, like a teacher. But in doling out a schar, Hashem takes great pleasure. So yesh lo litain lo, Hashem says, oh, you know, here's a schar, I'm so happy I can give it to you. That would be the contrast, because the shonos are not exactly the same. They also explain very simply, Hashem has a lot of schar, meaning including to make up for any loss that one might have lost in business from being the ma'ay to esek. Hashem will make it up either in this world or the next, but Hashem certainly makes it up. And they also note the contrast in the Lashonos. We speak about bitul Torah, and then amelus b'Torah, toiling in Torah. We don't speak about not learning X amount and learning X amount. And they say that's because, as we know, most of the schar comes lafi the effort, the omol that is put in, not how much ends up being learned. Like we say about tzedakah, we say about almost everything, echad amagad, echad amamid, the reward may be the same for somebody who does less and somebody who does more, dependent on his circumstances. I think we said a few weeks ago, of course, that's not an excuse for somebody who can do more to say, well, you know, I'll just do less and it's fine. Obviously not. But the tzad hashava being, if one puts in the omol, if one puts in the true effort, so then Hashem rewards. In Yud Aleph, we have Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. So this is a Tano who we have not met yet. And the problem is, he could be one of two Tanoim, actually. Eliezer ben Yaakov is not such a very rare combination of names, if you think about it. We have a few in the Gela, probably. And there were two great Tanoim, both named this. So the first Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov lived still Bizman HaBayis. He was one of the earlier Tanoim, the times of the Beis HaMikdash. He lived around the same time as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So the last, I don't know, 40 years or so of the Binyan HaBayis, this was an earlier Eliezer ben Yaakov. And the second Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov was a student of Rabbi Akiva. So he would fit more in the people we've been speaking about here. I would guess that therefore this is he, because we generally go in chronological order. We've been speaking about Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yonos, and these are all students of Rabbi Akiva's dor. So Mistama, I would, if you tell me I have to make a choice, I would bet this is Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov II. But luckily nobody's pinning me to it, so if it's the first Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, then that's who it is. Either way, he tells us a very important thing, certainly important for Elul, important for all year round. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Ha'osa mitzvah echos. Somebody who does even just one single mitzvah, Konelo praklit echod. He acquires for himself one advocate, one defense attorney up there in Shamayim. Over Avero echos, and inversely, somebody who transgresses Chas V'Sholom, even one Avera, Konelo Kategor Echod. He acquires for himself one accuser, one prosecuting attorney. And we should know, Teshuva U'Masim Tovim, doing Teshuva and doing Masim Tovim, Kisris Bifnei Puranus. That is like a shield before any Puranus, before any punishment would come. So the Praklit, like a Melitz, like we refer to a Melitz Yosha. Yeah, I'm sure it's Greek or some other derivation. It's certainly not. Right. We usually say kategor and sanegor. Yeah. For the real attorneys, we say a prosecutor and a defense attorney, kategor and sanegor. I was wondering myself, I looked in a few mafarshim, why we didn't say kategor and sanegor here. So nobody addressed that question specifically, but from what I understood, a praklit or a melitz seems to be even more. It seems to be somebody who, on his own accord, goes and is melitz yosher for you, who he goes and advocates for you. A sanegor is a defense attorney. If the kategor comes and says, this guy was speeding, so the defendant can come and say, no, really, the camera was broken, we don't know. That's a defense attorney. But it seems the praklit, though also, it's not used so much. I can think of a few places it's used, not so much. But the first to translate praklit into Hebrew as a melitz. A melitz is somebody who really, it's like a shtadlan, an advocate, somebody who goes in there and fights for you. Not only because you've been called in on the prosecutor's side and I need a defense. So in the context, it's definitely, I think, even a stronger lashon, but still it's interesting that they have a praklit and a kategor. It's not how we usually think. It's sanegor and kategor. So we're speaking about, of course, malachim up in Shemayim, the praklit, the melitz, sanegor side, and the kategor side. We in fact refer to this, those of us who do say kaparos. This is a quote from Eov. In Eov it says, "Im yesh olav malach melitz echad mini olif." The person will have one advocating malach, even one out of 1,000, lahagid la'adam yoshro. for about whom he can speak, this malach can speak about a person to tell the Beis Din for malach, to tell Hashem about the yashus of this person. So that's the idea of a melech. It's again somebody who's really fighting for a person. That would be the idea. But every mitzvah that we do, every mitzvah is not just a defense against an avera. It's a positive thing in and of itself. It creates these malachim who are advocating for us, which obviously we're not so aware of, but we all can use very much. The category we also should be aware of. So the Torah, Teshuvah and Masim Tovim are like a shield before the Puranus. First of all, it's interesting, some of the Mefarshim, the Rashbam actually reads it as Torah or Masim Tovim, not Teshuvah, but maybe it was an abbreviation, I don't know, Tof or Memtes, I don't know, or just however it happened, he has Torah or Masim Tovim, which therefore would not have a question. Our question actually is, why is Teshuvah before Masim Tovim? And the answer to that, some of us should bring, is that we know Makom Shabali Teshuvah Omdim Ein Tzadikim Gemurim Omdim. Even though there's a lot to be said about that, it's obviously something to being a Tzadik Gomer also. But certainly, at least on one side of the equation, Bali Teshuvah are extra special. So therefore, it first puts Teshuvah and then Masim Tovim. And this idea of being a tris, being a shield before saving from punishment. So the Sforno says that refers to that even if one does this Teshuvah or Masim Tovim or Torah or Masim Tovim only out of Yiras HaOnesh. Somebody puts up a shield because you're scared, not because I love the shield or it looks pretty and somebody's coming at me, I put up my shield. So even if one would use Torah or Masim Tovim only as a shield, but that means one has a Muna, one knows there's a Dayan, there's a Din, and I have to do something about myself. So that's also good. It's a shield before the punishment. This also fits in, the Mefarshim speak also, that we know there are really very many levels of not having done a mitzvah asay, having done an avera, having done a more serious avera. Like we read in Yom Kippur, we read all the different punishments, asay tochatanu, kareis lalenu, different things. So we know to be mechaper on all of them, some of them not only require teshuvah, but they require Yom Kippurim. Some lalenu require yesurim, even misa lalenu, some very serious chataim. So this would also fit in with the idea of at least it's a tris, it's a shield. It stops things, it prevents things, it holds up things. That one has time to do teshuvah, one has time to have a Yom Kippur pass over one. A shield can also be an idea it's maybe a little bit temporary, but it's a very important defense. It's the first line of defense, so to say. If one has done something wrong, so at least do teshuvah, and immediately, you know, you have something in front of you to at least approach a Kodesh Baruch Hu, look, at least I'm doing teshuvah, and, you know, let's work on it from there. And of course, also the idea, Therese, we know Hashem himself calls himself a Magain. Hashem is a shield also for us. As we read in the Yom Narayim from Yecheskel, from many places, Chayoni, Noam Hashem Elokim, Imech Post, Bemos, HaRasha, Kim, Beshuv, Rasha, Bidarko, Bechoya. Hashem does not wish a Rasha to suffer for his wishes. Hashem wants a Teshuva. Hashem is waiting. Shield is also an idea, but it's very immediate. You don't have to go to the king and ask for this and that and that and get amnesty. A shield, it's something you can immediately put up. So that's also, Hashem is very, very happy. Hashem immediately accepts Teshuva. Hashem is very pleased to see somebody doing Torah, Teshuva, Masim Tovim, all of these things. Continue in what is in the Siddurim, it's marked as Yud Dalid. In most Mishnayos, it's not a new Mishnah, but we have Rabbi Yochanan HaSandlor. So he's famous just from his name, Rabbi Yochanan the Shoemaker. He's probably an example of what we were speaking about a couple of weeks ago, how today it's much harder to be a great Rav and a professional. They had shoemakers back then, so, you know, you say my hours are 10 to 1, and the rest of the day I learn. Today we don't really have such options. But whatever it was, his name I think is pretty famous to us. I'm not sure exactly when he lived during the Tannai, but his name at least is very famous, Rabbi Yochanan HaSandlor. And he says in Yud Dalid, Kol Kenes Yoshi L'Shem Shamayim, any assembly which is for the sake of heaven, Sofo L'Hiskayam, in the end it will endure. V'She'eino L'Shem Shamayim, but that which is not for the sake of heaven, Ein Sofo L'Hiskayam, it will not in the end endure. So L'Shem Shemayim definitely refers to any sort of gathering or meeting that is working for Torah, Masim Tovim. But the L'Shem Shemayim adds an additional thing. Even if one claims to be gathering, okay, we're gathering here for the furtherance of whatever, whatever, if the gathering is full of kinna and sinna and people wanting their own honor and their own interests, and as we know, many such, you know, non-profit organizations in the rest of the world, they may be non-profit, but they're definitely in it for themselves in many respects. So even if they claim it's the Torah, Masim Tovim, that's not good enough, and we can't guarantee success. But if it's really done l'shem shamayim, everybody's in it only for the good reasons, not for their own interests, so then eventually at least it can be guaranteed that there will be some result from it. Whereas the opposite, in the end, will likely not stand. The Mefarshim bring down two examples, actually, from Chumash, which Rashi discusses. There are two places where it says, Vatikrabun Eli. Moshe speaks to Bnei Yisrael, reminding them, you all came to me. So one, by Matan Torah, it says, Vatikrabun Eli, Rashi Shetzeichem Zikneichem. To ask, although it's very great that Hashem is speaking to us directly, we can't handle it, you, Moshe, should please say the rest of the Dibros. And although Moshe was very alarmed by their request, Hashem said it's completely fine. And it's noted that over there, Vatikrabun Eli, they approached in a correct way. They approached giving honor to each other, not to themselves. Rashi Shetechem Zikneichem, they all honored each other. Okay, you should go first to Moshe. They came in a very fine way, and that was a good hakrava coming near. Whereas by the Meraglim, they were all in a panic. Vatikrabun Eli Kulchem. But Arbuv Yorash says, all in a panic, all pushing. I want to say it first. This is like, you know, each guy save what you can for yourself. They were all very, for some reason, they were very petrified. The thought of coming into Eretz Yisrael, and we know that the Meraglim themselves may have had some lo l'shem shamayim ideas, the Nesius would end different things. Yeah, we're speaking about people on a high level, but altogether that Vatikrabun Eli Kulchem was definitely not l'shem shamayim, and it resulted in the Meraglim, whereas the other one, Matan Torah, resulted in Moshe Rabbeinu with Dishkas Torah, which was really not such a bad thing at all. So that's the example they give, and the Sfarno, the Sfarno often is wont to apply these Mishnayos to the topics that the Tanoim themselves were dealing with. So he says this would be very applicable to all the different katim, the different sects that the Tanoim were dealing with. We know during their time there was the Tzedukim, the Baisusim, the Isiim. We don't hear so much about them, but we hear people who sound very much like such people, very ascetic people. Later the Christians, all sorts of different messianic sects. All sorts of different things. So the tzivuim, we talked about them a long time ago, people who want you to think they're good people but really are tzedukim at heart, a lot of different it's sad to say, but you know, that was the Chorban time, things were not so good. So he says this would be said, Rabbi Yochanan Asandla said this in regard to all these different groups and sects that people are looking around. They may seem to be doing better than we are, but you should know at the end, you know, They're not going to survive. And in fact, about those groups, we can certainly look back and see for ourselves. None of these other Jewish groups have survived. The Christians became Nochrim. Baruch Hashem, we did not become the Nochrim. The Notzim got from Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Maybe that wasn't even so bad. But Baruch Hashem, we did not turn into them. Tzedukim, where are they? They're gone. The Tzavuim, today we don't really have such problems. People who secretly are Tzedukim, even the Shamronim, they exist today. But as a tiny little group, they're hardly what they were back then, the Samaritans. All these Kashim, Baruch Hashem, are gone, and that should give us hope for, I mean, today we obviously face at least as much problems with our deviant sects and groups among Yehudim, but this should give us chizuk also, that also in the end, only the Shem Shemayim will last. So, our next Mishnah, which is Tesvav in the Siddur, it's Yud Beis in the Mishnayis, we have Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. So he was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, which also would fit well in the timeline of things. He is also distinguished, unfortunately, for being one of the Asara Ruge Malchus. We don't seem to know much about his Misa. He's mentioned towards the end usually. There's also, we say, the Chol Ayin Tereg Dema Dimua Al-Harigas Rabbi Elazar Ben Shamua. We just have a rhyme for it. We don't seem to know that much about his Misa, unless I just couldn't find it. I'm not sure. And a better distinction is he was the main Rebbe of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, which means, if we think about it, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, like from two teachers away, received from Rabbi Akiva. There's Rabbi Akiva, one of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, this Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, and then Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Of course, Rabbeinu HaKadosh also received from all of his ancestors. We know he was part of the Nesius house, we have that sheet, but nevertheless, one of his main Rebbeim in learning was this Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. So obviously we're speaking about one of the great Tanoi. And even though this Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua is so great, here's what he has to say. Yehi chavod tamidcho chaviv alecha kishaloch. The honor of your student should be as dear to you as your own. Some of us actually have not kishaloch, but chaviv alecha kechavod chavercho. That's more in line with the rest of the Mishnah, but either way, it should be as dear either as a fellow or as your own. Chavod chavercha kamora rabboch. the kavod that should be due to your friend should be like the fear and awe that you give to your rav, umora rabach, and the fear that you give to your rav should be kemora shamayim, should be as much as we can possibly imagine is due to shamayim. Obviously, there's no limit to that, but in terms of our human capabilities. So, the Mefarshim point out that only by the first one, the Talmud, it says chaviv alecha. Some Mefarshim say it applies to all the rest. It's just the beginning of a list. This should be dear to you, as should be this, as should be this, as should be that. But the word, though, is put in by the Talmud, and they say because chaviv, the idea of being dear, means that it has something to do with you. Presumably, if you taught this Talmud, you were his main teacher, he's getting honor, so that honor really comes from you. It should be dear to you. You should give him honor, but also any honor that comes to him should be a certain dearness, a closeness. The honor accrued to your rav does not come from you. You should love it, and you should make sure to give it, but it's not dear in that same sense. That's what some of us should point out. They also say, obviously, a Talmud, when a teacher is teaching a Talmud, he's really not going to treat him as a equal. It's not, he probably even shouldn't. But it means respectively, as much as one can while he's in the phase of a Talmud, one has to care so much for that honor that he deserves, as much as you would care about the honor that you deserve yourself, or the honor of your Rav, and so on. And they also point out that by the time it gets to your Chaver and the Rav, we suddenly switch to Mora, the Yira, as opposed to Kavod, and they say that's fine because included in really having reverence for somebody will be included respect, so kavod. The opposite is not true, obviously. You don't necessarily fear somebody just because you give them a little bit of honor. So that's not a problem. It's just one is more inclusive than the other. And again, like we said, this is one of the greatest Tanaim speaking, and he obviously, he had what to speak about. His Talmud was Rabbeinu HaKadosh, so I am sure that he did treat him with a good deal of honor. If we go on, we have in the Sidurim, it's marked as Tezayin. In some Mishnayos, it's Yud Gimel. It's the markings over here are a little bit different in each set of Mishnayos and Sidurim. So Rabbi Yehuda Sam is also when Rabbi Yehuda's name is given without an appellation, like not Rabbi Yehuda ben somebody or another. So he's usually Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai, another one of the great Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Exactly. The story involving Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, which we won't go into now because we're not talking about him right now, but there were three of Rabbi Akiva's students speaking about the so-called improvements that Rome had made in Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Yehuda spoke, obviously not meaning to praise them, oh, this is the greatest thing that happened to us, but he said practically, they've done a lot. They've made roads, they've made bathhouses, so when the story ended up getting back to the Roman ears, they were very pleased with what Rabbi Yehuda said, as opposed to condemning Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai to death and making Rabbi Yossi run away. So they ended up calling Rabbi Yehuda Rosh HaMedabrim B'chol Makom. They gave him a certain honorific title, like a chairman. He should speak first on all occasions. He was, in and of himself, he was a very great person, and he was also given that title. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, this is a short Mishnah, Hevei Zohir B'Salmud. Be very careful in studying Sheshigigas Talmud, because a mistake that occurs in learning Ola Zodon can be considered as if a intentional sin. So they say, speaking from the Talmud's point, this refers Ola Zodon, it's as if it's intentional. That refers only if it came as a result of carelessness and neglect. If you really misunderstood the Rebbe and, it's nobody's fault, maybe it's more the Rebbe's fault, actually. But if you were careless, you didn't review the thing, and you said, I think I remember he said, this is fine. This is something that applies to all of us. We're not in class, but, we think we remember hearing something similar to this, and it's probably fine. So that's a problem, because we're being careless. If we really have a question, we need to ask or refrain from doing it. Better to ask, but certainly not to try to be midama. Somebody thinks she heard from what her sister-in-law said she heard in a shia to a similar idea, that therefore it's probably fine. So that's never a good idea. And obviously, if this refers specifically to anything involving a halacha, something halacha l'masa, can be very serious. To err is human, but therefore one has to learn it again. One has to be sure it's true to err is human, but that's not the end result. Okay, it's fine, I made a mistake. No, it's not okay. And interestingly enough, some Mefarshim actually have the Girsa as Hevei Zohir B'Talmid. This would be speaking to the Rebbe then. Be careful about your student. Shashigas Talmid Ola Zodon, meaning you have to also teach very carefully. First, we taught it as if speaking to the student, hey, you better be careful, don't make mistakes. But we can also read it referring to the Rebbe, be extremely careful how you teach. We've had that a few times already from the beginning of Pirkei Avos. Be extremely careful and concise and clear as to how you speak, especially when teaching halacha or serious things. I mean, I know myself, I've gotten a scare a few times and I'm never doing halacha. But even in other things, I remember I was speaking once on Shabbos, and it was Parshas Vayera, so I said something about how Avraham had one akedah, and never throughout the Doros there have been many akedos. And a lady came over to me afterwards and she said, really? Like, where are they written? There were many akedos Yitzchak. So I got a shrek. I was happy that she asked me. I said, no, I mean Lolenu, all the harigos, all the redifos, all, we call them akedos. But it just shows one has to be very, very clear. I should have realized maybe she didn't have such a background. I mean, I didn't know who she was, but it struck me, you know, maybe she doesn't know so much. And I was trying to be careful, and I still didn't think about that. Baruch Hashem, she asked me, otherwise she would have gone home and said, you know, one is written in the Torah, but actually there are a lot of akedos that give out in. So one has to be very, very careful. We continue. Now we have Rabbi Shimon. Okay, so Rabbi Shimon, without an appellation, he's usually the Bar Plukta, he argues of Yehuda.